Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
As modern football fans, we see it almost every game. A pass that's tipped and either is caught by a defender, hits the ground, or is caught by the offense. But the rules of tip passes were not always this way. Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com joins us to tell us about the history of the rules of the tip pass, coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And it is Tuesday, and we have another special treat of having Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com joining us to talk about one of his most recent tidbits. And this one's really recent and fresh. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, thank you, Darren. Yeah, this is a good one. This is kind of one of the more bizarre rules, or one that, you know, most people had no idea that it was out there. Cause I just recently came across it. So.
Yeah. When I read it, I had no idea. You really enlightened me. And I thought I knew, you know, a lot about especially the rules and things like that, but this one really caught me off guard. And you titled it When Tip Passes Were Live Balls. Adds a little bit of mystery, but also, you know, sells a point, and just sounds kind of odd to our modern ear for football. So yeah. Why don't you explain this to us a little bit?
Yeah. So, you know, as I tried to explain in the article itself, you know, the forward pass had been around for a long time. You know, it just was illegal. You know, if you threw a forward pass, and what we would think of as forward lateral, you know, now, but if you did that, you lost possession of the ball. And then in trying to, open the game following the 1905 season, the rulemakers made just a host of different changes to the game. But one of them was they legalized the forward pass. And, you know, the rule book for 1906 only laid out like six or seven rules related to the passing game. You know, they couldn't really kind of see into the future what this thing might become. And for them, they were thinking of forward laterals, this short little right in the area kinds of, you know, not the downfield passing, which, you know, a couple of teams actually did in 1906. So they had just a really simple set of rules, but, you know, mostly, you know, the game, they restricted the forward pass a lot. You know, if you threw an incomplete pass, it was a turnover. And a spot foul, so it returned to spot of the pass. If the pass hit an ineligible receiver, turnover. If the pass crossed the goal line on the fly or bouncing, turnover. So, you know, things like that. And then you couldn't throw the ball until you were 5 yards to the left or the right of the center, you know, so it was consistent with the checkerboard pattern field, and the first person to get the ball couldn't run until they were 5 yards left or right. So anyways, you know, there were a lot of things, restrictions that just are inconceivable today. But then they kind of went through a season and they decided to add a few rules. And one of them that they added in 1907 was that if the ball was in the air and touched an eligible receiver, so an eligible offensive person or defense, then the ball and it then hit the ground, that ball was live. So basically any kind of batted ball by a defender, a tipped ball, a dropped ball, from an offensive player, was essentially a fumble. And so, there'd be a pass play and somebody would tip, try for it. They wouldn't get it, but they'd touch the ball. So then, the ball's rolling on and, like any kind of, like any situation where there's a fumble, it's a mad scramble to get to the thing. And since the pass was probably a little bit more in the open field, because it had to be 5 yards right or left, all that kind of stuff, there were guys flying in from all over the place, trying to get to that ball. So, so it's just one of those, rules. It seems so bizarre that they did that. And yet, it was, so the 1907 season, there's all these, if you read through, some of the commentary, you're reading like an old newspaper report of a game and it's saying, the ball bounced off of Smith and there was mad scramble for the ball and, Pittsfield State recovered or, whatever. and so then, again, the whole rule changes were supposed to be for player safety and they recognized that there were too many scrambles. So they made a change for 1908 where they said only the first offensive player that touches the ball can recover it, right? So if you think about it, the football rule that only the, like if an offensive player touches the ball or touches forward pass, then it have to have a defensive player touch that pass before an offensive can then, before a second offensive player can grab it. But that originated with that 1908 rule, trying to eliminate some of the scrambles. So it remained in place until 1911, and then they cut the rule out. But so you had, so you had 7, 8, 9, so you had a 4 year period where the tip ball was a fumble, effectively. And the other thing that's just funny about that is, talking about teams being unable to really conceive how to throw the pass and how, how do you create a pass route if you've never seen anyone throw a forward pass before? And one of the things that teams did fairly frequently, back then and until I think it was maybe 32, the offensive lineman could go downfield on a pass. So one of the approaches that the teams took was to, you'd send like all your offensive linemen to the left or something. And then whoever the eligible receiver was, maybe an end, would get in the middle of those offensive linemen. They kind of form a circle around them. And then they try to pass the ball to the guy in the middle while the offensive line blocked defenders trying to get at him. Because again, there was no pass interference yet. So,
and probably while the quarterback's getting mauled by like five guys that aren't getting blocked because of the line downfield.
Yeah, some of it's just crazy when you think about what a mess that had to be. Plus, most guys weren't wearing numbers. If they had numbers, it was only on the back of their jerseys. But even like Carlisle, as far as I can tell, Carlisle was the first school to paint their helmets. And they did it because they wanted to be able to identify who their players were, as they ran downfield, for passes.
That old Glenn Warner was a clever guy.
Well, he wasn't there yet.
He wasn't.
Yeah, he went back and forth between Cornell. He started Cornell, went to Carlisle, went back to Cornell, and in. He was back at Carlisle in 07, but in 06, One of the former players, was the coach. But they had, well, one of the other things the teams did was, like, when they circle the guy, sometimes they'd lift him up in the air, like in a, the rugby lineouts, when they're tossing the ball in. Which was, until just a few years before, had been a way, one of the ways that football teams brought the ball in from the sideline, from out of bounds, was the loud. Or they call it a fair as well. Anyways, they'd lift the guy up in the air to kind of throw him the ball. And, but so it's just one of those things that just, again, made sense at the time, maybe, I mean, they were just trying to make up some things, but the idea of a tipped pass being effectively a fumble is just kind of bizarre.
Yeah, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, if you would have said that with the guy in the circle and everybody else, helping him with it, before the tush push and brotherly shove or whatever you want to call it, maybe we would have said, "Oh, you're out of your mind. That wouldn't happen." But maybe it's more, a little bit more the normal activity we see in football these days, and which I hope they get rid of because I hate it. But go back to the rule.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay. You don't like the tush push, huh?
No, I like when they used to have the rule, you can't aid the runner. That's, let him, you can block guys in front of you, but you can't pull, push, or otherwise move that runner, help him go. I'm a traditionalist. I think that should be maybe it's not so traditionalist. Maybe they were helping the runner long before that rule, like you're saying. But the football with, you couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, it went away, quite a while ago, but I mean, it was part of the original game, and then they got rid of it. It really is a player safety issue.
I blame it on Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush against Notre Dame in 2005 or whenever it was.
Sure.
That's
because it was like the next year that they changed it.
Right. Plus they beat Notre Dame on that play.
Yeah. Well. Oh well. But back in the day, they, one at the time that they instituted, when they said you couldn't aid the runner, part of it was, you only had like three officials on the field. And so that call, officials were reluctant to make the call. Right. And so anyways, that's part of it. I'm getting a little bit confused now, but anyways, it was one of those things where trying to force the officials to make the calls, that's actually one of the justifications for why they brought it back, because people did, nobody wants to make that call. But
yeah, that's true. That's true. But it's getting crazy. Somebody's going to get hurt. That's my theory. And that's when the rule all of a sudden change and be banned again, when I don't want somebody to get hurt. Could be offense, defense, alignment, whatever, but somebody's going to get hurt. Tim, we love how you bring up some of these, oddities of football and things, unique aspects, or something maybe a team did, 100 years ago that we never heard of before. And including like this rule here, that's just part of football, and it's a great history. And you do things like this each and every day that you write about and explain very thoroughly, and a lot of times with images that that you find out of old yearbooks and newspapers and that. And how can people share in these tidbits that you put out to see them as they're coming out?
It real simple. Just go to footballarchaeology.com and subscribe. Then you'll get an email. Alternatively, you can follow me on Twitter. Or on Threads, or get the Substack app, because my blog newsletter is on Substack, and you can follow me on Substack as well. So whatever floats your boat.
All right. Well, his name is Timothy P. Brown. Footballarchaeology.com is his website. And Tim, we appreciate you coming here this Tuesday, and we hope to talk to you again next Tuesday about some more great football.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. we invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.